WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
August Wilson is a poet and playwright who grew up in Pittsburgh, where he lived until 1978, when he moved to Minneapolis, where he's now an associate playwright at the Playwright Center. In 1968, he founded the Black Horizons Theater in Pittsburgh. Ma Rainey's Black Bottom was presented at the Yale Repertory Theater as part of their 1983-84 season. It opens on Broadway next month. The play continues at the Annenberg Center through September 30th. The Annenberg Center is at 3680 Walnut Street. And for more information about tickets, you can call 898-6791. That's 898-6791. August Wilson, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you. It's good to be here. Yeah.
Why did you choose a recording session as the setting for this play?
Well, I think, and in order to answer that, if you go back to what was the genesis of the play, when I became interested in the economic exploitation of the early black performers, I had written a play called The Homecoming, in which a blues singer is recruited by the record companies in Chicago and taken up north to Chicago to record his records, and ended up starving to death in Chicago, and now his body was being shipped home. I became interested in that because I thought that it was one of the few things that blacks had that whites were willing to buy that was marketable. And at the same time, they were not exploited out of that as well as their labor. So I became recording studio seemed to be an appropriate setting. Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, which is I started in writing in 1976, was going to be the second play in a trilogy that was writing concerning this economic exploitation. And I started writing the play, and there were constant references which were made to the band members who were always off stage. And it wasn't until 1981 when I again began work on the play. By that time, I had already worked at the Science Museum of Minnesota as a script writer, writing for a theater troupe there. And I was a playwright in residence at the Playwright Center in Minneapolis, and my best friend was a director, so I became more and more involved in theater. So when I got back to the play in 1981, and I discovered the four musicians and made them a part of the play, then it became the play that we know now.
Several of the musicians in the 1927 recording sessions are uncredited. It says, you know, musicians unknown. Did that affect you when you first found out that, you know, here are these great records and you couldn't even find out who the musicians were?
Well, not really, no. I mean, those things happen. It's if dealing with the blues, very often you'll find that the person singing the song is, in fact, someone else. So being aware of those kinds of things, it didn't particularly bother me.
Why did you want Ma Rainey to be the blues figure in this? She's not as well known, for instance, to the public as someone like Bessie Smith would be.
Well, she was the first. They did call her the mother of the blues. So I thought it would be good to start at the beginning.
How did you first hear the blues?
That I recall was in 1965. I rummaging around in the Salvation Army, I bought a 78 record by Bessie Smith called Nobody in Town Can Bake a Sweet Jelly Roll Like Mine. At that time, I had been buying records for a nickel piece from the Salvation Army rather indiscriminately. And when I listened to this record, something happened to me. Something happened emotionally. I felt, for the first time, that here was someone who understood me and who was speaking directly to me. And then from that point on, I began to search out blues records.
Could you tell what it was that really spoke so directly to you?
Well, I'm not sure. I'm not sure. I think it was her ability to convey emotionally a situation or a circumstance or the kind of things that the blues does to people who listen to it. He simply did that to me.
One of the themes of Ma Rainey's Black Bottom is the exploitation of the musicians and of Rainey, but it's really not simple at all like that, because there's the relations that they have are very, very rich and very complex with each other. It's not a good guys versus bad guys kind of play. Was it always, was the relationships always that subtle when you were writing it, or did it take several drafts and until you could like develop that complexity of relationship and character?
Well, I think once I discovered the four musicians and decided to make them a part of the play, the idea of the economic exploitation of early black performers became actually secondary. What I wanted to do was to look at the lives of the people who created this music and to look at the content of their lives and actually to show that the largest ideas are contained in the lives of the people.
Because of shows like Ain't Misbehavin' and Sophisticated Ladies, I think when people hear Marini's Black Bottom, they expect that it's going to be a musical review of songs by Ma Rainey, where someone plays the Ma Rainey role. And in fact, there are a couple of songs in it, but it's not really a musical. You call it a drama with music.
Yes.
How did you decide how much music to actually put into it? You know, because some numbers aren't even completed. Like you'll hear a few bars and then it'll fade.
Yes. Well, okay. As musicians, naturally, they had in the band room, if they're rehearsing, they're going to play some music, etc. The only music that I really saw in the play was the recording of the song Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. As it turns out, there are snatches of other songs and pieces that work themselves in throughout the play. But I don't feel a need to have more music. I think the one song, the title song in the play, it would be sufficient.
What were your impressions the first time you saw your play staged? Did it look different than you had imagined it?
It looked wonderfully different. And by that I mean it looked wonderful. I don't know if you're talking about the first time I saw it staged was at a stage reading at the Eugene O'Neill National Theater Center's National Playwrights Conference. And it was just actually overwhelming to me. And I just thought, this is the best thing. And I think from that minute on, I felt I found out where I want to be, if you can, in terms of theater, and have it come alive and see it come alive. It was just a very thrilling experience.
You've seen the show many times because you've seen it basically every time it's been performed in
Yes.
New Haven and in Philadelphia. Does the play change to you?
I think, well, after seeing it 30 times, you begin to know I'm still discovering some things that are in there that I didn't realize before.
Yes. You wrote poetry for many years before starting to write plays. When you started to write plays, was it difficult to handle the dialogue? Because that's something you certainly don't really have to concern yourself with in poetry.
Yes. Well, not only did I write poetry, but I wrote short fiction. And one of the problems with my short fiction, I wrote the kind of stories where no one talked to them because I couldn't write dialogue. And I had a friend of mine in Pittsburgh who's also a writer who I envied because he could write dialogue. And I was constantly, tell me how you do this. When I moved to Minnesota in 1978, I think being away from that environment, I began to hear for the first time the voices of the people that I had grew up around with all my life. And I discovered that what I was doing earlier, I was trying to force poetry into their mouths in an artificial way instead of listening to the language and allowing the poetry and the music of the language to come through on its own. So once I discovered that, then I discovered I could write dialogue. But in what I would do with my short fiction was, since I wanted to write dialogue, was I would write stories that were composed entirely of dialogue. And one day I simply typed a scene description in front of this story with dialogue, and it turned out to be a play.
Do you find yourself eavesdropping on people now? Just to hear how they speak?
Not really, no.
Do you think that your method of speaking has changed after developing a writer's grasp of how other people speak?
I can't say that that's true either, no.
You have a new play that's currently being developed, also at Yale, I believe. It's called Fences.
Yes.
What's that play like?
Well, Fences is a family drama that in which the father of the family is caught in the changing realities of his life and how these changing realities comes in conflict with the values of his family. I wrote the play because I felt, especially for my generation of blacks, that there was so little about our parents that we actually knew. The indignities that they suffered, the the reasons for the choices that they made in their lives very often were hidden from us. And I thought it's important to know who you are, if you're going to know who you are, to know who your parents are. So I wrote a play to try to address that point.
Well, I wish you good luck with it, and also I wish you success with Ma Rainey's Black Bottom in Philadelphia and on Broadway.
Well, thank you very much. Yes.
I really enjoyed it, and I want to thank you very much for being here.
You're quite welcome.